Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, October 28, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Illinois Impact, Campus's New Case Total the Highest in 48 Days, More Mitigation Measures on Tap for Chicago. On the day the U of I campus reported its most cases since September 8, 74, students were warned in a letter, while we all are facing pandemic fatigue, anyone caught disobeying gathering size rules on Halloween will face discipline. More than 40% of Douglas County's 722 cases have come in the past 2 weeks, requiring county health officials to monitor 633 residents who either have active cases or are close contacts of someone who does. For Champaign County residents, four Champaign County residents were hospitalized with COVID-19, three fewer than Monday. On the day Vermilion mourned its 13th fatality of the pandemic, a man in his 70s, its hospitalization number grew by 2 to 16. Rantoul, site of an outbreak at Lincoln's Chicago Challenge Academy, now has the county's most active cases, 61866 Rantoul, 65, up 1, 61820 Champaign, 62, down 5, 61821 Champaign, 34, down 6, 61822 Champaign, 27, down 4. Indoor service at restaurants and bars in Chicago will cease as of Friday, when the city becomes the 7th of Illinois' 11 regions to be hit with enhanced mitigation measures by the state. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Champaign City Council, Black Lives Matter Street Mural Tabled, by Ben Sichterman, Champaign. Rather than provide direction on a Black Lives Matter street mural Tuesday, the Champaign City Council members said it would first like to discuss supporting a planned mural project recognizing local Black history. Several council members said they'd like to return to the Black Lives Matter street mural after a November study session with Visit Champaign County, which is helping organize the historic mural project. The Heritage Walk could be more powerful long-term, said Councilwoman Clarissa Foreman, who initially requested a study session on the Black Lives Matter street mural. It ties into so much more than just the street mural. Not that the street mural can't, but the way they have it set up, it can be educational. I just find it to be better. Councilwoman Vanna Pianfetti agreed and said residents in her district supported the VCC mural project. They thought it might be more impactful and be more to the point of what this mural was trying to do, she said. Councilwoman Alicia Beck said she still hopes the council affirms that Black Lives Matter, which several other council members said they wouldn't have a problem with. I don't think it has to be an either-or thing, she said. Council had been set to discuss a Black Lives Matter mural on Chester Street, just north of the city building. Before council members commented, several community members spoke in support of the Black Lives Matter mural, though some called it a hollow gesture or raised the specter of vandalism. Unit 4 Schools, welcome back. After 7 months, students returned to the classroom. It was really great. By Anthony Zillis, Champaign. Parents lined up in their cars on James Street and spilled in onto one lane of University Avenue in front of Dr. Howard Elementary on Tuesday morning, ready to drop their kids off at school for the first time in 7 months. One by one, students in the cars had their temperatures taken and were ushered into the school 6 feet apart from one another. Around 110 kids entered the gleaming new building, which has sat mostly empty since its completion this summer. The kids were walking up to this brand new space they've never ever been in, Principal Suzanne Meislon said. It was exciting. It was really great. They stayed socially distant. They walked right to their classes, even though they'd never been in the building. Of course, the first day didn't go off without any unforeseen difficulties. Meislon realized that more staff was needed outside to usher students in from their cars. A few thermometers, she said, stopped working in the cold weather. For early start schools like Dr. Howard, there was little way to foresee those difficulties on the first day of school of its kind. Those kinks, though, were worked out in advance for late start schools like Garden Hills. Principals emailed saying, "Hey, make sure you have enough people in the car rider line," Garden Hills Principal Asia Fuller Hamilton said. That was pretty much the point that needed to be solved around the district, the car rider line and the temperature checks. But we were able to problem solve that and get the kids in fairly quickly. The day was a happy one for both Meislon and Fuller Hamilton. For both, it was their first day meeting students in person as their school's principal. Meislon, of course, recognized some students from popping in on their virtual classes, but finally meeting kids in person had a different kind of excitement. Telling parents they couldn't guide their kids into school for their first day of kindergarten was heartbreaking, but she said the rest of in-person learning for the 110 or so schools who were in school that fits 350 went swimmingly. The time, of course, was short. The fraction of students whose parents decided to send them back to school physically are only in the building for 2.5 hours. It went by really fast, Meislon said. I did a couple of rounds of every room, and when I got back, it was 9:45, and it was like, oh, dismissals in 30 minutes. I felt like we just got here, and we just got settled, and it was like, oh, it's time to get ready to go. Both principals, of course, had been planning for the theoretical return to school for months. To finally see students was a reward, even though the uncertainties. No one, no amount of education, no experience could have prepared me for this moment, said Fuller Hamilton, who received a doctorate degree in 2017. Leading during a pandemic is not for the faint of heart. It definitely requires a lot of sleepless nights. I think that's definitely on the list if you're going to lead during a pandemic, because you're always problem solving. You're always trying to figure out how to keep an eye on everyone to be safe. You're memorizing the safety protocol manual to make sure if there are issues, you know how to respond. The job doesn't turn off. It doesn't stop at 4:00. We'll be here problem solving for another hour and a half after that time. How to make things better for tomorrow. No harm, no foul. Will chickens come to roost in Sydney? Paxton. By Dave Hinton, Sydney. Jason Arrowsmith has found out there are more people who would like to see chickens in Sydney than he originally imagined. The president of the Champaign County Village of 1,200 said he had a number of people tell him chickens should be banned in the community. That was before the village board this month voted to prohibit residents from keeping them in town. Then Arrowsmith and other village trustees found out not everyone agreed. He expects a good-sized turnout of people expressing their opinions at Monday's village board meeting. Everybody before was telling me they don't want chickens, except one person said she wanted to have chickens but also wanted to extend it to waterfowl and any other egg-laying bird, Arrowsmith said. But when the word got out of the board's vote, more people spoke out. I'm sure we'll have plenty of public comment after the comments on Facebook and I've received a couple of phone calls and talked to a few people in person," he said. Arrowsmith broke the 3-3 tie vote to ban the birds. Those residents who already have chickens have until December 31st to get rid of them. Trustees Leroy Schulter, Donna Hooker, and Brett Harris joined him in voting for the ban, while Dan Gattikin, Tyler Bikers, and Matt Laurent voted against. Arrowsmith said he has a house that's close to where chickens are kept with a rooster. "That's part of how this got started, the complaints about the rooster," he said. "I brought it up to the village attorney, Mark Hendren, to send them a letter to get rid of the chickens." But Hendren informed Arrowsmith the village did not have anything on the books that said residents could or could not own chickens. So Arrowsmith raised the issue at the board's September meeting. Hendren was told to draw up an ordinance allowing chickens. After a resident spoke at the October meeting objecting to the noise chickens caused near her home, the board voted to bar the birds. "I hear them all night long," she said. "I know I'm a light sleeper. Please do the research a little more. They're farm animals for a reason." Gattikin, who voted to allow chickens, said he believes people should be able to do on their property what they would like to do on their property, and chickens are valuable for the eggs. He doesn't believe roosters, however, should be allowed because they are a nuisance. Arrowsmith said he believes the claims that hens cause about as much noise as roosters are unfounded. "I've never heard a hen sound like a rooster," he said, adding people who live on a farm have told him the same thing. Other trustees said they wouldn't care if chickens were living near them. Vicki Roberts, a resident who raises chickens, said she was upset to learn the town had passed the ordinance. I have wanted chickens for years," she said on Facebook, and after pestering her husband, he looked at the town ordinance and found there was no regulation against having the fowl. Robert spent $600 on enclosed housing and a run and bought 6 hens in July. "They don't draw coyotes if you house them correctly. Why should I lose my girls due to a few uninformed people's wishes?" Robert said, adding that many major cities allow them. Sydney isn't the only area town where this issue has come up recently. At this month's council meeting in Paxton, residents Dale Wise and Kristen Larson asked the city to consider modifying restrictions regarding chickens. They cannot be housed closer than 150 feet from any residence, school building, church, or public way, which makes raising them in most residential properties almost impossible. They distributed material to aldermen that indicates chickens are not noisy or odorous if their pens are properly maintained and they don't attract predators. Wise and Larson said they have no desire to keep roosters and said the council could allow chickens by requiring a permit be obtained that would mandate they be properly controlled and cared for and limit the number of hens allowed. The council made no comments after the couple's presentation. Mayor Bill Ingold said he has had no feedback from any council members about the issue. Ask the Admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. Question: with Thanksgiving and other holidays approaching with friends and family gatherings near, if those who wish to get together were tested within 3 to 4 days before the event to confirm they are negative and quarantine until the event, would the risk of transmission be considered high risk, medium risk, or low risk? And would members who are sharing a meal inside the home without face masks and who have tested negative within this time period, using other social distancing guidelines such as hand washing and distancing, be a way to minimize exposure? Answer: fortunately, getting tested in our community is rather easy and would certainly be worth the effort if the worry were diminished. Unfortunately, any gathering with others where masking and social distancing cannot be maintained will present opportunities for the virus to spread. The problem with relying exclusively on testing is that there are false negatives. We learned through the White House outbreak that even people who are tested every day can cause outbreaks when masking and distancing are not followed, especially indoors. From the Our County section, Governor's visit to Champaign, $15 million in grants to help boost training academies off the ground, by Ben Zichterman, Champaign. Eden Park Illumination, which makes ultraviolet light panels on the west side of Champaign, has tripled its staff in the past 6 months, thanks in large part to COVID-19 demand. The employees there operate computer-controlled machines, analyze product data, and weld glass together to make panels that emit specific wavelengths of ultraviolet light, including one that disinfects rooms without harming skin. While CEO John Yerger said he's been able to find employees, not all of them have worked out. There's a bit of a not 100% success, not 100% stay and work out, he said. So with training and preparation, our yield rate will be higher. That's the idea behind Governor J.B. Pritzker's announcement Tuesday in Champaign of plans to create two community college-based manufacturing training academies. It really fits perfectly with what the skills that we need are, Yerger said. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity will provide a total of $15 million for two capital grants through a competitive application process. The manufacturing training academies will be constructed in downstate Illinois, where DCEO Director Aaron B. Guthrie said there is a shortage of skilled laborers. A lot of people are having to drive 60, 70 miles just to get to an academy that can serve their needs to advance their career. So now the goal is to have this training a little bit more local for folks who can continue to upskill and get access to these high-paying jobs, Guthrie said. The DCEO partnered with the Illinois Community College Board to develop the training academy proposal. Community college districts or coalitions of community college districts in downstate Illinois will be eligible to apply for the funding opportunity. Guthrie said the funding will likely be awarded in early 2021. As we look at grant applications, we'll look at a variety of factors: the type of training they'll be providing, the location, their partnerships, how they plan to serve the community, Guthrie said. Bird's Eye View, Broadlands. Staff writer Anthony Zillis took his drone to southeast Champaign County for a high-in-the-sky tour of the village. If needed, heritage ready for remote learning. Broadlands. Until late last week, Heritage had avoided what school districts around the area have dealt with, a positive COVID-19 test. After surrounding districts were hit by a slew of cases, forcing several to table their in-person learning, Heritage Superintendent Tom Davis and his staff remained vigilant. We've implemented some new innovations that we had planned or were already doing, but are now in place when that remote day does come, Davis said. Heritage announced its first case on Thursday, but precautions have been in effect all year. The jarring changes the district, which covers Longview, Allerton, Broadlands, and Homer, has been forced to make will have some positive, long-lasting implications. For instance, the district installed new Promethean smart boards in classrooms, which they can use as a big screen for kids to look at in person, and can also share with students who are learning remotely. Heritage has school for 4 hours a day in person for students who choose that option, plus an hour and a half of remote learning. The district also recently added 90 Chromebooks to its stash. If we have to go remote, now or in the future, Davis said, we'd be able to hand them out, especially to those who need technology at home. The school has also been finding as much use as possible for its newly upgraded greenhouse. The upgrades cost $30,000, $12,500 of which came via a grant from the state. Each day, Davis knows, is a gift, and he doesn't take the next one for granted. Every day, getting to noon, is one day of intense instruction. During that 4 hours, Davis said, and then you just get through the afternoon. That article by Anthony Zillis. Vehicle thefts. Seymour, Bonneville, latest towns to report vehicle mischief. By Dave Hinton. County sheriff's police are warning area residents to lock their vehicles and not to leave valuable items inside in the wake of a spate of vehicle thefts and burglaries in recent weeks. The latest ones came Sunday night and Monday morning, when vehicles in Bonneville and Seymour were broken into. Two vehicles were also stolen in Bonneville. Champaign County Sheriff's Lieutenant Kurt Apperson said 11 vehicles were entered in Seymour. A vehicle that had been reported stolen in Champaign was also recovered in that village. The same night we had a burglary to a vehicle in Bonneville, Apperson said. We also had two stolen vehicles out of Bonneville. He said it appears that the thieves check door handles to see if they are locked. If not, they enter them and take whatever valuables they can find. In some cases, keys or key fobs are left inside, and those vehicles are stolen. Among the stolen items was a lottery ticket, which has been recovered. Apperson said the stolen vehicles have not yet been recovered. He did not release the make or models of the vehicles. He said a number of area communities have reported similar incidents, including Thomasboro, St. Joseph, Pasotum, and Tolono. People who live in these smaller communities need to start locking their car doors and not leave anything of value in the vehicle, Apperson said. Another thing that worries us with the cold weather, people will leave their cars running to warm them up, making them an easy target to be stolen. Among the area police chiefs who have been warning residents have been those in Thomasboro and Mahomet. Monday night, Mahomet Police Chief Mike Metzler posted a notice on Facebook warning residents, "Please lock your vehicles, garages, and your doors," Metzler said. Jay Simpson, Jay's Take. My life is a tall tale. Being taller than everyone has always been the normal for me. I was always the tallest in my class and eventually became the tallest in the school. People always wondered where I got my height from because my mother is only 5'4" on a good day and my father is about 5'10". And then there is me, standing at a towering 6'10" tall. Being the big kid growing up was quite the experience. I got questions everywhere I went, and people couldn't believe it when I told them my age after seeing how tall I was. There was a lot of second-guessing, especially at sporting events. I had to keep a copy of my birth certificate on hand at all times because the parents from the opposing teams would demand to see it to make sure I was the same age as their child, and most of the time I was younger. I stood out a lot more than others, and sometimes it made me uncomfortable. For a while, I never understood why people would stare at me when I entered a room, and then I realized it was because I towered over everyone else. I can't even keep count of how many times a day I get asked how tall I am or if I'm a basketball player. I've learned to embrace the attention I get and use it to my advantage. Just me being a really tall man has sparked conversations with people that eventually led to lifelong friendships. I don't think they would have even started a conversation with me if I was normal height. When you're constantly turning heads, it comes with curiosity, and with curiosity come questions. And from that point, there is an opportunity to network. I look at being tall as a blessing in disguise rather than feeling awkward about it. Without being me, I wouldn't be in the position I am today, nor would I have a lot of the connections I have. Being tall has been a blessing for me. Talk of the towns. Among today's topics, Monticello School Project, Camargo Parade, and Bement Food Drive. Monticello. The $35 million school project is winding down and could be completed months ahead of schedule. Finishing touches are being put on the Seavers Center Gymnasium, which now is being used by elementary school students during the day. Sports practices had also begun, but are paused with the high school not having in-person learning until at least November 4, after its COVID-19 cases. Meanwhile, renovation work continues on the original 1921 high school section. School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman said about $50,000 in contingency funds will be used for unexpected plaster and drywall replacement. "We are winding down," said project manager Chris Ulrich. "I would say that the majority of the work will be complete by March, April, and then we'll be doing punch list items, finishing odds and ends, everything like that, up until May. St. Joseph. St. Joseph Ogden High School will be sending a survey to parents and students to gather information regarding scheduling for the second semester. Superintendent Brian Brooks said the district is considering bringing students back to the building on a hybrid schedule if it can do it safely, so every student would be in the building 5 days a week. "We are seeing some academic struggles with our kids on our current schedule, so this is the driving force with this," he said. The survey will go out in November, and the Board of Education will make a decision in December. Camargo. The village will hold a glow cart parade at 7 p.m. Saturday at Opal Thompson Park. Bement. Girl Scout Troop 3596 is holding a food drive. The Scouts place bags on house doors in town and will pick them up November 1. Homer. Troop 42 in Homer helped clean up GAR Cemetery and Homer Park last weekend. Also, Homer Community Library has announced new temporary hours. It is now open Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., through the end of the school year to help students. Royal. Prairie View Ogden's COVID-19 team met and agreed to modify the district's calendar for the remainder of the fall semester. November 5, November 24, and December 18 will now be a full day of attendance, and November 24 will have students in the B group attending. These articles by Steve Hoffman and Nora Mayberry Daniels. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, October 28, 2020. Please stay tuned.